So we are continuing in Hilchot Deot, in the journey of, pardon? Well, we finished Dalet, but in order to really understand, you know, Perek Aleph Halacha Dalet, chapter 1, the fourth Halacha, now we really have to understand Halacha Hey. And you will see that there's a little bit of a challenge in terms of how to understand the congruence of these two Halachot. Okay? So let me read the Halacha and share with you another halacha of Mechusei Torah, and I think you'll see the question. While I read this, okay, I want you to see if you can come up with the question. There is at least one question which should be an obvious question, okay? Just to remind you, yesterday we said that we're looking for balance. Who is that individual? How do Chazal describe that individual who has that moderation, that balance, that middle ground? Let me ask the question again. I feel like I'm in high school. Like, if we're going to do this, then let's do this, okay? And again, I remind you, for the guys who are into this, great. For the guys who aren't, there's a few guys learning, that's fine with me. Who is the guy? How does Chazal describe the person? No. There is a term that is given in Halacha Dalet. Take a look. Okay? No? There is the Chacham. Okay? And we're going to repeat this again because there's a reason that this becomes important. If you think about it in learning Chumash, okay, so when you see a word somewhere in Chumash, right, Chazal, when they don't learn by reading. They learn by listening. They see something, they read something, and they hear an echo. They're reading the story of Moshe and the Teva that's on the Nile, and they hear the echo of the Teva of Noach. And if you look in the Midrashim, there are all these Midrashim that start talking about Noach. You don't understand, what is Noach doing in the middle of the story of Moshe? Because there's only two places in the Torah, we mentioned this once. Right? There's only two places in the Torah where there's a Teva. Noach is saved in an ark, and that allows him to save the world, or the world is reborn through him, or it's a new world as a result of his being saved. And he's on the water on an ark, in a Teva, which we call an ark, but I don't know if that's an accurate translation. Moshe is in a Teva, saved on the water, and through Moshe, there's a new world. Because when Moshe brings Torah into the world, so it's a different world, right? So the rabbis hear that echo when you're studying the story of Chet HaEgel, and you hear that it says that Vayinachim Hashem, right? That Hashem somehow is Nachim, relents, changes his mind, whatever it means. So the rabbis hear an echo also of Noach. Because when Noach is named, Lemech, his father, says, Ze yinachameinu mimaseinu. Same word. Right? Sometimes you feel like there's an echo, but you know where the echo is coming from. So you look it up in the Concordancia, and you see where the word appears, and you all of a sudden find connections you didn't know existed. Right? That's true in the Rambam also. Once you've read this Rambam, and you see the word Chacham anywhere in Divrei Chazal, there's going to be an echo. Like when you read that Mishnah that we quoted yesterday, Ezu Chacham alomed mikol adam. Who is the Chacham? Someone who learns from everyone. So what does that mean? Why is someone Chacham? Because he learns from everyone. What if he learns from an idiot? Well, who says you should learn from everybody? Okay, that could be one response, right? But anyway you look at it, there is something to learn from everyone. But why does that make you a Chacham? Maybe that makes you nice. So if the essence of chokhmah is moderation, is balance, then there's something about being able to learn from everyone that comes from balance. If you don't have that balance, you're not really able to do that. That's one way to look at it. Just out of curiosity, why would that be? Why do you think that moderation, balance, is what allows you to learn from different people? Yeah?
Because if you're too stubborn, then you won't like ever listen to any other ideas or any other knowledge or learning that anyone has. But if you're too, like, lenient, then you could listen to it or, like, be too influenced by, like, whenever anyone talks about anything.
Okay, think about this for a minute. If you're too stubborn, or fill in the adjective, too stubborn, too angry, too lazy, any adjective you want that you're too, you will have difficulty learning from everyone. Why? But why?
Too far to one side.
Pardon?
Too far to one side of the scale.
Well, so why does that make you out of sync with people?
It makes you less willing to work with people who are on the other side of the scale who are not like you.
Why?
You're putting up a barrier there where you're not letting...
But why does that put up a barrier?
You're limiting yourself to this adjective.
But why does that limit you to an adjective? There is an idea that's really deep, and I want you to know, I can say this, you can hear it, you can even hear it in a way that you'll remember it tomorrow. But the real challenge is to make this a part of you. So you tell me if you agree with this. I think maybe the reason that extreme character limits your ability to learn from everyone, and that's just one example, learning from everyone, because any extreme in character development is really all about you. When you're too stubborn, the reason you're too stubborn is because you are right. It's all about you. Your ability, if you think about it, your ability to be able to accept that someone else could be right stems from the fact that it's not really all about you. Now that leads you, does that make sense? Like anger. Anger is a great example. Okay? We mentioned this once. Anger has nothing to do with the other person. Right? It has nothing to do with the other person. In fact, when you find yourself in a state of anger, okay? Like, you know, there's what you aspire to and there's who you are. And you hope that what you aspire to is who you are, but you at least have to recognize when it isn't. And all the time you come up with this, right? So if I ever experience anger, right? So the safest way to have healthy behavior is to develop habits. Do you agree with that? You develop habits, habits are a gift. You fall into habits. You fall into good habits, you fall into bad habits, right? You first have to define what you think and who you want to be, and then you decide what habits will help you get there, okay? So, for example, I'll give you an example. Let's say you realize that you have anger, that you struggle with anger, right? It's not difficult to realize that you struggle with anger. You start to notice that you do certain things out of anger that you afterwards regret doing. So, what's the healthiest way to limit the mistakes that you make when you're angry? This is easy. What's the easiest way to make sure that you don't make the dumb mistakes that you sometimes make when you're angry? Pardon? Well, don't get angry is easy. That's like saying someone, that's like that campaign that came out in Nancy Reagan's time, just say no. Yeah, that accomplished a lot. Right? No? So what does that mean? Quiet. When you're angry, be quiet. You can't say something stupid if you're not saying anything. So, one of the ways, look, I can't tell you I'm there yet. I can't tell you it's not something I, you know, everybody struggles with anger on some level. But I can definitely tell you that I'm in a different space than I was 20 years ago. And one of the habits I decided to develop was that when I'm angry about something, I really try just not to talk for a while. Just don't talk, right? It doesn't mean if you ever see me being quiet that that means I'm angry. But if I am angry, I'll at least try. Maybe sometimes I'll succeed. Maybe sometimes I won't. With anyone and anything, okay? If I'm in a car and someone does something really stupid that puts my life and their life at risk, right? The dumbest thing you can do is roll down your window right away and start yelling because you're angry. And the reason you're angry is because it's all about you, okay? If you stop and you're quiet and you start to think about it, right? You could decide to communicate because you care about the other person. You could actually really care about another human being. You could look at that car and say, you know, this person might be married. Maybe they could have killed themselves. How would their family feel? You wouldn't be angry, right? It'd be a different communication. And that's why the Mishnah says, siag lechochma, a way to create a barrier, a fence, to retain chochma, to retain wisdom. Siag lechochma, anybody know the Mishnah? Shtika. That's what this Mishnah Pirkei Avos says. There's something that relates shtika to chachma, because silence allows you to recognize that it's not all about you. Now, by the way, why does silence do that? Don't forget your question. Why does silence do that? This is so obvious that it's deep. Where do you hear, where do you say every day something that tells you that silence can be a good thing, can bring things into your life, can bring you wisdom? What point in your day would you say you could meditate on the idea of the value of silence in your life at the appropriate times? Way before Shemoneh Esrei, but not that far before Shemoneh Esrei. Sure. Yeah. When you're listening, you're quiet. if you're talking, you're not listening. Shema is all about learning to listen. It's all about hearing what's around you, hearing yourself, hearing where you're headed. Sometimes listening is about hearing what you're about to say before you say it. If you could really hear, did you ever say something and just almost as soon as you said it, you realize that was such a dumb thing to say? Like sometimes it's just embarrassing, and sometimes it's painful because you said something that's so hurtful. You know? I just read this book. There's this fellow who wrote this book called Tuesdays with Maury. Ever hear of this book? Whatever. It became a bestseller, whatever. And I was in the airport and I had some time before a flight, and it was one of those, I don't have enough time to open up the laptop. So I saw a book that I thought looked interesting. I like to buy a book that I know my kids will like, my wife will like, and I'll like. So I picked up this book. I forget the exact title, but it's something like One More Day or One Last Day by the same fellow, Mitch Albom. It's not a long book. In fact, they package it very cleverly. It looks like a big book, but it's big print. It took me all of 3 hours to read. It's a brilliant book. It's a brilliant book. One Last Day, One More Day. And the whole theme of the day is, if you could only have one day in your life back that you regretted, to redo, to re-experience. It's a very deep book. And part of this book, he talks about his relationship with his mother, and he talks about times my mother stood up for me and times I didn't stand up for my mother. Right? Whatever, you have to read the book. Just things that he said. You know, his parents got divorced, and his father would give his mother a tough time, and his mother was the one who was really there for him, and his father was never there for him, and his father pushed him at the table, how come you don't make baked ziti like my mom used to make, or whatever it is. And then he looks at his son, who's like 11 years old, and he says, right, isn't this awful? And the mother looks at the son, and the father looks at the son, and he's forced to choose. And he says, yeah, this is awful, because he doesn't want to disappoint his dad. And he crushes his mother. And of course, the dad is the one who walks out, and the mother's the one who's there all. And later in life, he realizes he didn't stand up for his mother. It's such an innocent moment, but it's a moment, right? What if you could hear that and hear the implications of that before you say it, recognize where it would go, and decide not to say it? You live a different life, right? That's all chachma. Chachma is balance. And balance comes from that place that you recognize it's not all about me, which leads us to another question that we'll get to now in Halacha Hey. So listen to Halacha Hey. Yeah, sorry.
I don't think that silence is always an option when you're angry, though. Like, let's say a bunch of guys are having a conversation back here, and someone is saying something that really just makes you really angry, and you think is also having, not just makes you angry, but you think it's having a negative influence on the people around them, and it's creating a bad mood or whatever. Right? So in that moment, you don't have the option. I mean, you have the option to stay silent, but you're letting bad things happen to other people.
No, no. What option do you have? I agree with you. Sometimes you have to say. By the way, that's a good example because it's a delicate example because you have to balance not allowing some people to either be embarrassed or influenced in a negative way, but at the same time not embarrassing the other person. Right?
Yeah.
So it's a balance. What you can absolutely decide is that if you're going to speak, you're not going to speak in anger. You're right. Sometimes silence isn't an option, right? Somebody's walking on the street, and you look up, and you see this huge shape hurtling down. And you realize it's going to hit this person. So at that point, you don't say, let me contemplate what I'm going to say and think if it's going to be the right thing to say. You know, you yell, watch out, right? I agree with you. But you don't want to yell in anger, ever. Anger always limits your ability to communicate. You put two people at a table with completely different perspectives. If they're both angry, they're arguing. If they're both calm and happy, they're having a discussion. That's the difference. And why do they get so angry? Because it's all about them. If I'm left-wing, and I think that we should be negotiating with the Palestinians and, I don't know, giving up the Temple Mount, it's just a piece of space. And you think if we give up on what's holiest to Judaism, we're going to be encouraging terrorism and this is ridiculous and we've given enough, and that's your opinion, right? They're both valid opinions. In this case, one of them is wrong because they can't both be right, but they're both valid opinions. And you can't really have your opinion in a healthy way unless you can hear mine. And the only way you can hear mine is if you're not in anger. And the reason you would get angry is because it offends you that I have the audacity to think you're wrong, right? But if you recognize that it's not about you, it's about something bigger than you, and you're even able to get around the idea that you have what to learn from me, so then it'll be a discussion. and you'll live a healthier life, and the world will be a better place. But we're still missing one piece. Does that make sense?
Yeah?
Okay? But we're still missing one piece, right? Okay? By the way, you want to do an interesting experiment? This is an interesting experiment. You know, like you walk down the street on Shabbos, and you have this instant free pass to have a discussion with somebody, right? You walk by somebody, just say Shabbat Shalom. Like, most people don't feel comfortable walking by somebody they never saw before and say, hey, good morning. Because the guy looks at you like, good morning. But really, that's what you should do. Have a kabel kol adam b'sev panim b'for. You're supposed to, you know, rejoin everybody with a healthy countenance, whatever, fine. But on Shabbat, people will do that even though they don't know what to do, right? Shabbat Shalom, right? So that means that you have something that you can say that can bring a smile to someone's face, that can create healthy communication. Okay, so I'll give you another one, right? If you're in an experience in this yeshiva, even just this week, and you sense that someone's getting angry, okay? So just say Hilchos Deos. Just say Hilchos Deos. Now you gotta be careful, because if you do this in an arrogant way, it'll make them more angry, okay? Just do it as an experiment. Do an experiment, Hilchos Deos, right? And see if you actually enable yourself to let go of some anger as a result. It's an interesting question. Just try it. See what happens. Do an experiment. By the way, there is a mission in Pirkei Avos, which is not halacha, but it means that it's a deep ethical value that says, "Ein meratzin adam b'kaso." You're not supposed to try to calm a person down when he's mad. In other words, if you get all gung-ho about this and you're going to change the world and you're going to make and help everybody else not be angry, you see somebody's really angry about something, right? The answer to that is not to go over to him and say, "Hey, Hilchos Deos," like, that just makes him angry. That's not healthy, right? And there's a reason that that's not healthy, but we don't have time to get into it, right? But you can do it to yourself if you see a person's getting angry, which is different from a person being in anger. Okay, so listen to this halacha. Umishu medakdek. Now, we said that the chacham, oh, boker tov, shalom aleichem. Feeling better? Baruch Hashem?
Beautiful haircut.
Right? A beautiful haircut. Umishu medakdek alatzmo biyoter. So somebody who is really, what is ledakdek? To be, somebody help me out here, to be precise with himself, exacting maybe, right? Like, this is the guy who, when you say 9 o'clock, or sorry, 9:15, Hilchos Deos, he's here at 9:15 on the button. He won't get here at 9:15 in 30 seconds, because that's a waste of 30 seconds for him, right? But he won't get here at 9:15:07, right? So that's middakdek. That's really exacting. Most people are not middakdek. I'm not so middakdek. You try to be somewhat middakdek, not too middakdek. Okay. Mishu middakdek al atzmo biyoter. V'yitrachek mideha benonit me'at letzad ze, o letzad ze. If a person says, you know what, I know that you can never be exactly in the middle. So I'm going to choose which side I'd rather risk being off on. In other words, anger, dead fish. We'll call her because that's the Rambam's example. I'd rather be a little too dead fish than a little too angry. So I'm going to be medactic and make sure that I'm always on this side of the line. Trying to get to the middle, but from this side. Okay. So somebody who's medactic on himself that way, okay, nikra chassid. He's a chassid. Now this is interesting. The chacham is someone who finds the middle. The chassid is someone, I would have thought a chassid is on a higher level. I mean, the Mishnah Brachos says, chassidim arishonim, you know, there are all sorts of descriptions. They used to wake up earlier and meditate. They used to fast. They used to do all these things. So this person who's medaktek on himself, he's called a chassid, right? But that's interesting because usually you think that that's a higher level, but the Rambam says that's not the goal. The goal is the middle. And yet I would think if you're really on a high level, you become a chassid. This is a really important idea. Sometimes guys get into yeshiva, they get into the zone, and they start to be medaktek on themselves, you know? And that person is called a chassid. And I would have thought that, like, let's say, for example, you wake up in the morning, and let's say that we decide, you know, okay, minyan, it's 8, but you realize, like, the day really originally started at 7:15, right, 7:30, and you don't want to lose that half an hour just because we decide we're going to have minyan 8, so you're going to use that half hour for something else. And you decide that you want to wake up early and you want to maybe meditate. And then you decide you want to do Netil Sadaim and you want to make a bracha and appreciate the bracha. So you turn on your alarm at 6, you jump out of bed, you wash your hands and you scream out the bracha, Baruch Adonai, and you wake up all your roommates. Right? So that may be, you know, sort of good for you personally, but it's at someone else's expense. So that's not chokhmah. That's not the middle ground. That's not the goal. And yet, that's a chassid. So we need to understand this. Ketzad, he says, how does this work? Mi shiitrachek mi gova alev ad akzeh acharon, v'yesh shafel ruach biyoter, somebody who decides to distance himself from arrogance to the extreme, and he's going to be humiliatingly humble, shafel ruach, low of spirit, right? Nikra chassid. That person's called a chassid. Vezoi midat chassidut. And that's the character trait of chassidut. To be in that extreme. Right? We'll have to understand what that means, and we'll get to that, but okay. V'im nitrachek ad ha'emtza belvad, v'yanav. But if he only gets to the middle ground, and he's humble, he's an anav, but he's not shfel ruach, he doesn't make of himself lowly, right? Like, I'll give you a great example. We had this whole discussion at the beginning of the year about, you know, how to set up the seats, where the guys sit, where the rebbeim sit, whatever it might be, right? And last year, so I sat over here. We had the tables facing this way. It made it uncomfortable for the guys because when guys had to walk back, they would bump into my table, have to get around, whatever. So we decided, like, it didn't really work because it wasn't fair, like, when people were trying to get through. So we switched around the tables that way. The guys actually suggested we put it that way. And then we felt that, you know, for whatever the reasons, that, you know, some of the rebbeim felt, whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, you put two rebbeim up there, two rebbeim in the back, and that's, like, a little easier. People can get to us, whatever. So they decided to put the Rosh Yeshiva up there. So I was a little uncomfortable with it. I don't really like sitting in the front. I especially miss sitting amongst the guys and sitting in front of the guys, and that's why I sit back here more, whatever, right? But you could still be an anav if you're sitting up there. Because an anav means that you know that it's not about you, and, you know, you're not the goal, and you let go of that stuff, right? And you can sit up there, not whatever. But you can't be a chassid if you're up there. Because the chassid would be in the extreme. The chassid would sit back there. The chassid would say, I don't even want a seat. I don't want people to think I'm important enough to have a seat. And that's a chassid. That's midat chassidut. And yet that doesn't seem to be the goal. I would think that's great. Maybe it's not great. Why do you call that a chassid? We associate chassidut with something positive, right? But if it'll be anav, he'll be called chacham. Right? In the trachek ad ha'emtza belvad v'yeh anav nikra chacham v'zoi midat chochma. So, what is that? What's the difference between chacham and chassidut? Right? So I want to suggest that what the Rambam seems to be saying, and we're going to get to this, okay, is that the chassid is the person who knows he still has to work to be the chacham. The chassid is the person who says, the risk of my being arrogant is so great, I'd rather err to the extreme of humility. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't realize, or at least the Rambam is saying, that that's not the goal. You should be able. If you really, you know what it's like? It's like you go to a wedding, right? So when you first get smicha, and the first time you're at a wedding, and they call you up to do a bracha under the chuppah, right? Or maybe it's nothing to do with smicha, but whatever, right? So it catches you by surprise. You don't expect these things. But after like 20 years, you're up, whatever. So you know sometimes you have a student, whatever, they might call you up to be a bracha, whatever. So, you know, you think, you're aware of it. So you won't be out at the bathroom during the chuppah because it's embarrassing if they call you up. And it's also not mechubad to the chatan and kala. And you won't stand all the way in the back to have to walk the way through. You'll stand on the side, so it'll be whatever, right? And you know, you make sure that you're in a healthy space. Like, you don't need to have a bracha under the chuppah, and you don't mind if they don't call you up, whatever. But if they do, so you go up, right? But you've still thought about it. Like, you still thought about it. You still thought that maybe they'll call you up, maybe, whatever. But the fact that you're thinking about it means that you're not a pure enough. Because if you're a pure enough, the issue isn't even there. You don't understand why it's an issue. You know, it's a mitzvah. You're making a bracha. What does it have to do with anything? Like, what's the difference who they call up, right? That's something to aspire to. That's healthy. That's balanced. That's middle ground, right? Sometimes a person knows he's not there yet, so he takes it to an extreme, right? We need to understand this. And you have to understand, the Rambam goes on, the chassidim harishonim hayu matim deot shelahen midarech ha'emtzayit kineged shtei ha'ktzavot. These great chassidim, the pious ones that the Gemara talks about, they would push their character flaws, their character traits in one side or another, right? Right? Because they knew they weren't in the middle. Sometimes they would pick a character trait on this side, sometimes on that side. You have to know which side to be on. This is beyond the boundaries of law. This is above and beyond the call of duty. It's not something you're obligated to do. It's something you have to know who you are. Decide if you're at the space where it's healthy for you to work on this, right? And then the Rambam says the piece that I don't get. Ready for this? Umitzuvin anu lalechet bidrachim ha'elu, and we are obligated. It's a mitzvah to follow these pathways, to find this middle ground. Sehema drachim atovim vayisharim, and these are the good and the healthy, the straight, the true, the narrow, the honest paths. Sheneemar ve'alachta bidrachav. The Rambam says that there's a mitzvah. Now, if you remember when we started Hilchoteret and I showed you this title on top, the Koteret, so the Rambam says that there are 11 mitzvot, and he says that the first mitzvah is lebriyut lehidamot bidrachav, to imitat yodei, to mimic God. And so the Rambam says the reason that you have to find this middle ground is because you have to imitate God. So I got two questions. First of all, why is this only halacha hey? If this is the mitzvah on which Hilchot Deot is based, if this is the mitzvah of finding healthy character balance, why don't I start with this? Number one. Number two, why? Why do you have to imitate God? I mean, putting aside the bigger question, which is, how do you imitate that which you can't understand? Like, notwithstanding all that you're studying with Rabbi Aaron, at the end of the day, we can never fully comprehend God. We can't even come close. So how can you imitate God? And why would you need to imitate God? I'm not God. Why should I imitate God? Yeah.
So that's the first part. I mean, you said that the Rambam is the rationalist. So, I mean, it's similar to the way that we approach Kashrut, where we took it from a rational standpoint first, why you would want to do this, besides the fact that there's a mitzvah, and why this makes sense in your life, notwithstanding the Torah, and then you build up to the point where, by the way, there's a mitzvah too, and Torah kind of knew this all along.
See, I used to think what you just said. I used to think, like, we're building up to it, and we're... But what bothered me about that was there are many other places where the Rambam starts with the mitzvah. Like, at the end of the day, the reason that I make sure that this is a kosher cup of coffee is because I believe Hashem asked me to do that. And that's where it begins for me. You know? I made a commitment to, I don't know, I made a commitment to my wife. And when I made a commitment to her under the chuppah, that meant many different things, many of which I wasn't even aware of when I got married. And one of them is to trust her. Right? And that commitment means that if she asks me to do something, right? So we have a minivan. And the alarm thing on the minivan, right? So it got messed up. And she drives the van. I don't drive the van, right? And she asked me yesterday, listen, do me a favor. Can you take it in tomorrow morning on your way in to go to, you know, to fix the thing? So you know how it is. Like, now I got to go earlier, and it means I don't get to sit and have breakfast with my kids. And I'll have that pressure of, will I get to here to stay out some time, whatever. But I don't really think about all those things anymore. Like, that's a first-year married thought. You know, sure. Like, if that's what you want me to do, I'll do it. Set it. You know, figure it out. Right? So I do that, and I take it in whenever. And the script to this, by the way, is that I've been telling her for a few months, like for half a year, this thing looks like it's going. You know, you should stop by one day and you know, take care of this because it's going to mess you up. Sure enough, I'm in the States, and it gets messed up finally. It, like, the thing falls off, whatever. And so... And in the back of my mind when I was telling you this, I was like always smiling because I said, I'm sure I'm going to somehow end up taking this in. I don't know how, but I'm sure. I'm always laughing because we're in the same script. It's a script you're in, you just can't seem to get out of. And that's okay. It doesn't bother me, right? So I go, right? Because she asked me to do it. And while I'm driving there, so she called me up. So I thought maybe she forgot something. So she called me up just to say, listen, I just wanted to thank you for taking it in. I really appreciate it. She doesn't have to do that. I know she appreciates it. I'm married. Married her for 20 years. She doesn't need to say that, right? She wants to say that, and the reason that she says that is because it gives her a chance to value something, and that's how your relationship builds. So, Hashem tells me, take the alarm in. I don't get it. I mean, why does Hashem need me to do that? But if Hashem asks me to do that, then that's it. I'm done. I'm going to do that. But every once in a while, I get the chance to have a communication from Hashem that Hashem actually appreciates that. That's mind-boggling, right? Which is what some of you are striving to achieve. In fact, if you want to know why I'm in a different space than you are, it's because I've already had that experience. And I can vividly remember being where you're at, I think. I don't know where you're at, but my guess is never having had that experience and frustrated because I'd met people who had that experience and wanting to figure out how to get there. Right? So I'm in a different space. So Hashem tells me, I want you to drink kosher coffee. So I'm done. Right? Hashem asked me to do it. I'm done. That's a mitzvah. That's why we do it. That's where we start. That's what should start the halacha. There's a mitzvah that Hashem says... You should walk in Hashem's paths. As you develop your relationship with Hashem, you realize it can't be because God needs people to follow His path. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, you could debate whether God exists, but once you accept that Hashem runs the world, so the definition of Hashem, the only way to have an Hashem, to have a relationship with Hashem, is that Hashem is that, you can't even fill in the blank, that would never need. So Hashem doesn't need me, I need this, and I have to figure out why. Which brings me back to my question, so why is this only halacha hey? One way of understanding this is that everything that the Rambam has been talking about till now, all our discussions in Hilchot Deot, is defining the mitzvah. There's no point in my telling you, okay? You know, it's like when my children were little. You know, you have an interesting halachic awareness challenge that I didn't have when I was a kid, okay? There are many people today who have no idea what an Erev is. They've never been for a Shabbos in a place without an Erev. There's a Mishnah that you read right before Shabbat in Bamei Madlikin, right? That says that one of the things you do before Shabbos is you mashmish b'kisa. You're supposed to check your pockets, right? And I remember once, you know, I'm big on telling my kids, like, you know, think about what you're saying, ask about what you're saying, whatever. So at one point, you know, I don't know, it might have been Mayan or Yonatan is wondering, like, why are we mumbling all these Mishnayos before Shabbos? So I said, well, you know, before you ask me that question, why don't you study them? It's an opportunity to learn. That's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be learning. So we get to that piece. I mean, that's an interesting question, right? But Mimadlikin, why do I start Shabbos with what wicks can you use for Shabbos candles? Like, could you pick a more mundane, inane detail? Like, talk about love and beauty and peace. Well, if you use for this type of stuff, it's not good. It smells for Shabbos, right? So there's a whole discussion about what the wick of Shabbat represents and how I enter Shabbat with that idea of what wick am I, and I'm not going to get into that. So we get to that piece. I think it was Yonatan. And he says, why do you have to check your pockets before Shabbos? So I said to him, well, because, you know, so you shouldn't carry. So he says, what do you mean you shouldn't carry? So I said, well, you know, like if you're in a place with no Erev. So he says, what's an Erev? Now he's like, I don't know, 9 years old, 8 years old. And I realized, why should he know what an Erev is? He's never been for a Shabbos in a place without an Erev. On the rare occasion we're someplace without an Erev in a hotel, I just don't, you know, walk out carrying it. Like, it's not an issue. Right? So there's awarenesses that we don't have. Right? If I don't understand the word Erev, I can't tell him, listen, just make sure the Erev is up, because he doesn't know what an Erev is. So the Rambam is saying, there's no point in my giving you this mitzvah of Halachta Bidrachav if you don't understand what it means, Lalechet Bidrachav. So the Rambam has just defined that the meaning of Lalechet Bidrachav, of walking in Hashem's paths, is moderation. Now I want to understand why. So if you remember, we asked, why do I need to imitate God? And why is the definition, the essence of walking in Hashem's ways, finding balance? Okay, and I want you to know, and here we're in the sharing mode. I'm just sharing with you this. We're not going to talk about this now because I can't do this in a minute, and we'll do this tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. But to me, this idea is one of the essential ideas that allowed me to develop my relationship with Hashem on a whole different level. Okay, and that's the reason that this is the second set of halachos in the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei Torah has this whole involved discussion. In fact, if you guys decide after Hilchos Deos that you want to do that, we can go back and do Hilchos Yesodei Torah. But sort of the whole principle of that God exists, etc. Now he's going to talk to you how you bring God into your life. He doesn't do that in Hilchos Yesodei Torah. That would be the next thing to do. Like, if you were creating a yeshiva high school curriculum, I would think the first thing you start with is, does God exist? What is God? Right? Is God relevant? Then the next thing would be, so how do I develop a relationship with Hashem? For whatever the reason, by the way, that's valid, because the yeshiva experience starts with when you're 4 years old, theoretically, and that's not when you do that. It's different. But if you're at the stage you're at in sort of adulthood, so then that would be the stage to go. And we're going to find out tomorrow, at least I'm going to be able to share with you my perspective tomorrow on what that is and why that's critical. And where that comes from. To the extent, by the way, that if you meet a person who has unhealthy character traits, it's because he has an unhealthy relationship with God. There's something, his relationship with Hashem is lacking. He's missing Hashem in his life. I don't care what he's wearing. I don't care what he's doing. I don't care how long his tzitzis are. I don't care how much Gemara he knows. If he can be rude, if he can be angry, if he can embezzle, his relationship with Hashem is missing. It's probably not even real, and he just doesn't even realize it. So we'll get to that presentation tomorrow. A little food for thought. Boker Tov, have an awesome day.
Guys, can I just get everyone's attention? Gather around. Mikey.